Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and sitting next to me is Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We are in our in-house studio for this, Jim. This could be a huge disaster or really, really cool. So I haven't figured that out for myself yet. But here we are. How are you, Jim?
Man, I'm good. Good to be here in person, getting, you know, cavities rolling and rocking and, you know, great Halloween candies.
I was wondering
Bucks
where you're
are
going
5-0.
Yeah, I didn't know if you were talking about like some dental work there. No, you're talking about the everything that you were able to get trick-or-treating. Did you get quite the harvest when you were going door to door?
You know, actually, I didn't go door to door. I may have held back on those coming to my door. So I had. I was proud of the treats that we were providing. So I thought I had to, like, one for you, two for me situation going on.
Excellent. That's how it works. And then your kids come home with a bunch, and it's once again one for me, two for you. Or maybe even reversed. I don't know. The Milwaukee Bucks are undefeated going into a Monday night showdown with the Detroit Pistons, the first of two games against Detroit at Pfizer Forum. They're going to go 82-0, right? I mean, we talked about how we figured they'd start out slow, maybe 6-9 like last year. You know, they've got no Chris Middleton, no Pat Connaughton. Their depth is pretty tested, and all they've done is just won all five games. Now, some of that is the opponents they've played, such as the 76ers and the Nets, have gotten out to really slow starts, so that might be some of it. Some of it is the fact that four of those five games are, in fact, at home. But I don't know, man, Jim. They've been so impressive, and I don't know if your expectations have shifted. I'm kind of surprised that we've seen the starters out there for every single game. But as you look at it, I mean, do things change? Can five games, winning them all, set things differently for how you were going to look at this season in general?
Yes, because I believe our season preview podcast, JR, I told you, hey, these Bucks might start 500.
Yeah, you did, yes.
So obviously that was not right. But part of that is what you said. Philadelphia clearly not ready to play. Brooklyn clearly not ready to play. Atlanta was. Atlanta gave the Bucks all they can handle. Houston just doesn't have that talent. We'll see. Detroit, you know, Detroit stole a couple or stole one for sure with the Bucks last year. So we'll see how this two games in 3 days works. But I think expectations changed when Giannis Antetokounmpo sits there after every game that he scores 30 to 40 points and says, I'm not really feeling it. I'm not really in my groove yet. And yet he's doing what he's doing. And then the Bucks suddenly have the best defense in basketball again as they work in new elements of defending the perimeter, and Brook Lopez looks like he's 26 years old. So, yeah, I think, look, are they going to win 62 games? No, I don't think that's going to change. But, yeah, I mean, I thought they'd be a 500 team. They're 5-0. Why not push it a little bit, JR, and say, wow, if you can get to 7-0, after this home stretch, and then you look at the schedule and see San Antonio and Oklahoma City, you know, coming up on the schedule, and you're like, wait a minute, 9-2, 10-1 is out there. All of a sudden, you could play 500 ball the rest of the year and finish with 54 wins, 55 wins. Like, just how well you started. It does change things in that way.
The defense is super interesting to me. I know we've talked about it a little bit, but Brook Lopez just blocking everything under the sun. And like you said, he looks so good, and they've incorporated elements of the drop defense where necessary, but they've made a pretty good transition here defensively. And they, like you said, it has not hurt them. I mean, you could argue that it did hurt them maybe over the last year plus as they got to this point, but this is a team that looks very, very stingy defensively. I mean, it helps having Giannis Antetokounmpo and, you know, Brook Lopez, who's always been a good shot blocker in the middle of the lane there, but this is more than I would have expected. I don't know if I look at this and think Brook Lopez can't possibly continue this coming off of a season where he, you know, he had back surgery and missed the bulk of the year. I don't know if I believe that he can be this night in, night out, but I mean, on the man, not only defensively, but the man has hit shots from deep too. Like, he had a great night against the Hawks shooting from three, and that's obviously been an element to his game. But I wasn't counting on Brook Lopez as like one of the stars of the team, and I have to reevaluate that now. I mean, without Middleton and Connaughton, they haven't missed a beat, and part of it is that they're just oppressive anywhere around the rim. Do you worry about Brook Lopez being able to sustain this, or does it feel like this is something that really could last for, you know, for the season?
Look, one of the reasons I said Brook Lopez looks like he's 27 is through five games as we record this, he's playing 31 minutes a game. He hasn't played 30 minutes a game since he was 27 years old yeah. in Brooklyn when he was, you know, averaging 20.6 points per game as the main focal point of their offense. So on one hand, I feel like Brook Lopez playing 30 minutes a game is not sustainable because I just don't know if you have a plan on having 100 games of him, right? Like that Serge Ibaka will have to have a few more minutes, maybe Giannis a few more minutes at the five, or Bobby Portis, for instance. But I think some of this is roster mechanics. No Middleton, no Connaughton. You know, frankly, you need Brook Lopez's offense at this point of the season. That said, health-wise, I mean, he looks every bit as healthy as he's been in how long, and I don't see – I mean, the reason you have a surgery, right, is to become healthy, to fix the problem. And, you know, if he's feeling good and feeling great, you know, I don't see why that's not sustainable because he's frankly been this guy when healthy in the past.
He and a lot of the starters playing back-to-back games, we haven't really seen anybody who's not outwardly hurt outside of the two-way guys not be active on game night. That surprises me. That's not how Coach Mike Budenholzer really did it all of last year. You had Giannis sort of missing games here and there. So far, it's early in the season, so I guess it sort of makes sense that you wouldn't start resting guys yet, but we've seen them go full tilt. Has that surprised you? Do you expect that to change anytime soon?
I think I anticipated not seeing some players against Atlanta in their first back-to-back, but I guess in retrospect, you're like, well, it is the first back-to-back.
Yeah.
There aren't really the nagging injuries yet. You know, they are playing 3 and 5, you know, on the stretch, JR, where, you know, maybe you would have thought Serge Ibaka plays more to give Giannis more time or give Brook more time. But there are, again, some roster issues there when you're missing three rotation players. So that's part of this too, where it's easy to say, oh, Giannis should have a day off, or Wesley Matthews should have a day off, or whomever, but then you're down to...
He takes their place.
Right, and they're still trying to win games. So we'll see, I guess, as this goes. I don't anticipate, you know, the next back-to-back in December that these guys are going to play all of those. But here in the early going, look, what did we talk about all last year at the end of the season? Game 82. They rested it, you know, against the Cavs. Oh, you know, now in Game 7's in Boston instead of at home. Well, wins in October mean just as much as wins in March or early April, right? So what if they start 10-1? That sets you up for, Jerry, you mentioned this last year, that Houston loss always stuck in your craw.
Yeah, I hated that one.
Like, you lose to Detroit, you lose to Houston, quote unquote, games you should win in the middle of the season. Guess what? That meant just as much as resting everyone in game 82.
Yep.
So to your point of are you, like, I'm not that surprised that early on the healthy guys are playing. This is where continuity, I think, has benefited them. Philadelphia, again, not ready to play. Brooklyn, not ready to play. Atlanta, for as good as they are, I still think in that moment of late game crunch time, Trae Young, DeJounte Murray still not really knowing what to do with one another. And then you've got the other guys that didn't have much of an impact. So the Bucks, they know what they're doing. So they're not only are they better than Houston and better than New York as a roster, they've also, I think, won games because they just They know one another. Like, they're ready to play at the start of the year where so many NBA teams aren't.
Yeah, Atlanta, I think, is going to be for real. I think they've bounced back. Having Murray is a really important piece for them, and he was pretty good against the Bucks. But like you said, there's still something a little bit missing that the Bucks don't have. And you know, I don't know anecdotally if I would think of the Bucks as the team that pulled away late last year. I feel like they did let a few games get away. But in these games, you know, New York is a good example when the Knicks were making a rally. Atlanta is a good example. The Nets are a good example. I mean, the Bucks were just down the stretch. They put those games on ice. And I don't know if I necessarily would have thought that of them last year.
No, they lost. Remember how many? That was a storyline. Well, third quarter.
Yeah.
Blew the 22-point lead, you know, and some of them they won. A couple they lost. Will that happen? Sure. It's going to happen.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
But look, if you can level it out, that's always a good thing. And even if the leveling out means 90 points or shooting Giannis scoring 4 points and a half, you know, it hasn't looked great on the offensive end, JR, but again, defensively, they're the best in the league from front to back right now. It's working on the perimeter. Wrote about it over at jsonline.com. Brook Lopez, yes, blocking all kinds of shots, but it kind of starts with that perimeter defense setting up Brook and Giannis and Serge. I think they're number two in the league in block shots as we record this, JR, just behind the Nets. It's, you know, it's working in the early going, and that's sort of what's carrying this team. And as Giannis said, that'll carry you better or more frequently than having to rely on offense. And Giannis, this is kind of surprising, JR, and look for this down the line for me. Giannis was like, I don't know if we had this the last couple years where the defense was sort of there regardless. And I think that's to the point of you're missing, you're up 22 and then lose the lead.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, the shots aren't falling, but the stops are still happening. So, yeah, it's been an interesting start in that way, and I think it can change expectation to go back to how we started this pod.
What are you thinking about Drew Holiday these days? He's picked up the scoring load a little bit. He's not shooting the ball well. We've seen that before, but I mean, man, the guy's so money. He's just so good defensively in particular, but just I feel like he's just a rock. I watch his game and then I look at his numbers and I can't believe that his shooting percentages aren't better or that he's just not all around, you know, statistically better. I feel like, again, he is the ingredient that the Bucks needed so badly before they became a championship caliber team. What are you seeing from him so far this year?
Yeah, I think it's more the same in the sense of when Chris Middleton's out, Drew looks for his shot more and he shoots more. Unfortunately, it does seem like in those games, the shooting percentage kind of craters. And it's such a weird thing because he gets to the paint and you just see so many like layups or little floaters kind of rattle around and go out. Like
this is just like last
year. I feel like he's the victim of some real bad luck at times. But you really like the shots. I mean, he only gets to the free throw line about three times a game for as much as he gets to the paint. So I don't know if he also doesn't get the benefit of the doubt of, you know, of maybe getting fouled on some of those that don't go in. But yeah, I mean, look, he's averaging 8 assists a game to go with his 18 points as we record this. So yeah, the shot's not falling, but it's not really affecting his defense, which it rarely does. And he's still playmaking at a really high level. Because, you know, I think Chris Middleton's 6 assists a game kind of get lost sometimes. So for Drew to sort of up his playmaking in that way, yeah, I mean, he's Drew. He is 32, JR. I don't think, you know, you're going to all of a sudden find a new gear, so to speak.
No,
you know,
right.
You just kind of hope that the shooting percentages, again, trend upward just as the year goes on. The sample size gets bigger.
I feel like that is what happened last year. He was missing just some crazy around and out shots a lot early, and then middle of the year things picked up, and maybe it would ebb and flow, but I do feel like things leveled out for him last year. You mentioned Chris Middleton, and every time I bring up injuries, I just forget about Joe Inglis, who is a huge contributor or will be, but since he hasn't yet played for the Milwaukee Bucks, it's easy to sort of overlook him. But it doesn't sound like there's much in terms of timetable on where these guys are. Pat Connaughton, of course, being the third of those guys. But can you glean any sort of update from where, you know, when you think we might see those guys on the floor?
Yeah, I mean, we're coming up on the 3-week period for Pat Connaughton. So when the team, when he injured the calf, the team provided an update in a rare fashion, put a timeline on it. They don't really like to do that, but they put 3 weeks for Pat Connaughton. Now, what does the 3 weeks mean? Does it mean he's going to start practicing this week?
Yeah, he's a long way away from, well, even if he's perfectly healthy.
And when I say practice, they don't practice. I mean, is he now on the court doing court things this week and he might return, you know, once they hit the road the first week in November? Or is it, no, 3 weeks, now he's reevaluated? That I don't know.
Yeah.
It still might be a bit yet for Pat Connaughton. Middleton's interesting. So when Coach Boonholzer says there's really no update, he kind of offers a little bit of an update in that it's, he's working with Charles Lee and some of the assistant coaches, which means he's probably doing some half court stuff. And then he was asked about an update and said, oh, he's taking some contact now in some of the play groups. So I feel like Middleton is getting close. I've sort of said, I think, Jared, at the beginning of the season pod, I was like, oh, I'm looking at November.
Yeah.
It feels like we're getting close with Chris. Honestly, I think for listeners right now, I hate to say this, but check our Twitter feed, at Jim Ozarski. I think what's going to happen is the injury report before a game is going to say Chris Middleton, questionable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the change because they have to do that.
Yeah.
He can't just go from out. I don't think the Bucks are just going to go Chris Middleton out. Well, maybe he'll just be off the injury report. But like it'll be something like that where you're going to hear from us in that way. Or maybe the way it works, you know, you get, you know, the agent.
Oh, yeah.
Out the Woj 10 minute heads out. Up. Yeah, they give the 10 minute heads up on the injury reports of Woj or Shams to do, you know, to do whatever it is they have to do. They feel with those guys. So that's how
they're
gonna,
guys who tweet out when guys change agents. And
yeah,
big
so that's how
news.
That's going to come out, like, unfortunately. And then we'll see Chris, and I'm sure it'll be, you know, he'll play 20, 25 minutes as he works his conditioning back.
Yeah. You wrote about Javon Carter again at jsonline.com, which you should definitely check that out. All of the things Jim writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Also check out our Bucks newsletter. You can sign up for that there. But Javon Carter is, still starting, contributing quite a bit. And George Hill, you know, I when you shoot 11 for 20 to start the year, you don't hear as much about George Hill, Jim, on the social internets. He started out pretty good too. So the Bucks are getting they're not that deep right now because of the injuries primarily, but just in general they're not a super deep team. But those guys are delivering. You know, Javon Carter is, you know, what is it, 3 points a game, 4 points a game, but still a menace on defense, which is what you wrote about. So give me a sense of sort of updating where you see those guys are right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, Carter, I think, is trying to find the right spot. So, for instance, against the Knicks, he probably needed to shoot more than twice. And we talked to Boonholzer about it, and then what happens? He puts up 12 shots against Atlanta.
Yeah.
And or vice versa, whatever it was. I might forget my games here and you know, added double digits. And then kind of goes back down again and doesn't. I think him and Grayson Allen combined for 4 points their last game. So Carter, yes, his signature is defense, but I think when Middleton and Connaughton are out, George Hill, Wesley Matthews, Javon Carter have to score a little more. I don't know if we've seen that. You know, Matthews, you know, George Hill shooting 36% from three, probably a number he's not thrilled with. But it's better than last year.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Definitely better than, look, Lopez, Portis, Matthews, Grayson Allen, Drew Holiday, Javon Carter, not shooting well from distance right now. They frankly need those guys. I mean, look, Giannis is shooting better from three than all of them.
We are talking five-game sample.
Five-game,
I feel obligated to at least
size,
say that.
But it's still, you want that to turn, and I think until Middleton gets back and in full throes of his rotation minutes, until Connaughton's back, you need a little more offense, a little more than like two shots a game, a little more than 4 points a game from those guys, just to ease some of the burden on Giannis and Drew.
So taking a more macro look, what's five games is nothing, I realize, or however many games teams have played across the NBA, but is there any way to glean what's real and what's not? You know, the Nets obviously are having some problems. Kyrie Irving, the chaos principle of the Brooklyn Nets seems to be coming to roost again. Kyrie Irving with some controversial comments and some pointing to a movie with anti-Semitic stuff in it. I mean, just a mess, and Brooklyn really down on him right now. So that's not a great situation, and they haven't started out hot or anything like that. The 76ers are down. Meanwhile, teams like, you know, Cleveland, I think we've talked about how our admiration for them, they are in a really good spot to open up the year. Again, I mean, most teams are 3-3. Like, this is just you can almost glean nothing from the early part as the standings go. But are there any revelations, you think, as it relates to the Bucks? You know, they're you know, the Eastern Conference, the playoff outlook going forward?
I mean, eight games is, what, 10% of the season? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're closing in on sort of some of that stuff, right? So, I think what, from the Milwaukee point of view, what you can glean from is they invested and banked on continuity in a veteran roster. The Bucks are reaping the benefits of that at 5-0. I think Phoenix, for as much of a problem as I thought they were going to have with DeAndre Ayton not talking to Monty Williams and, you know, whatever, Jay Crowder situation. Look, they're 5-1. And why is that? I mean, largely that's the same core that they've had for years. You know, I do think the Spurs and Utah at 5-2 are probably outliers, you know. In terms of the East, though, yeah, look, Boston is a good team. I think the fact they handled the coaching situation when they did to give them a whole camp as sort of their squad, they're playing well because they're Boston. There's continuity there. I think Cleveland, you're right. You add an all-star to a team that already had two all-stars. Darius Garland goes out. Oh, yeah, there's Donovan Mitchell. And Evan Mobley. And Jared Allen. And, Kevin Love's doing his thing. So, yeah, I don't think I've seen anything abnormal out of the East other than Brooklyn descending into what Brooklyn is maybe quicker than I thought.
Yeah.
And then Philadelphia, you know, did I know Joel Embiid had plantar fasciitis all summer and didn't move? No.
But, you know, he's had issues like that before.
Right, so, and so the fact that Doc Rivers, after a few games of Joel looking out of shape, finally was like, well, guys, and we can get into that, like when you should be telling folks that guys are hurt or not. You know, he let his team take some bullets and some losses and then finally was like, wait a minute. This is actually what's happening. Like, maybe you want to set an expectation earlier, but that's just me. I think Philadelphia is still going to turn at some point in terms of Joel getting in a better place, but we'll see. Look, Bucks are 5-0, Brooklyn's 1-5. Like, I can't say that it helps the Bucks to win early and then discount the fact that Brooklyn isn't winning early.
Yeah.
Like, do the Nets want to be 8 games behind the Bucks in the first 2.5 weeks of the season? I don't think so.
No.
You know, do they? Because that just it. There is a hole that's too far, and then you look at, you mentioned the chaos theory. Like, Kevin Durant suddenly gonna, like, he went from wanting out and everyone fired to I'm all in to, like, can we really believe KD's gonna be all in?
We have no idea
if they're 1-10. And like, so that is, I mean, that's whatever, man. Miami 2-5. Interesting, like unexpected a little bit. So, but you're right. The bulk of the East is gonna be tough, and the Bucks are gonna lose a bunch of games. So that's why I kind of wonder, JR, if maybe, you know, do you, you know, yeah. For instance, look at this upcoming road trip: Atlanta, OKC, San Antonio. Every other day.
Yeah.
Maybe at the start of the year, you're like, oh, maybe Giannis gets one of those days. Give him 3 days off. But if you're 7-0,
Do
you say, Giannis, how you feeling?
It's hard to turn your back on an undefeated team, even though I mean everyone knows you're not going to go 82-0, but like it's hard.
Is there momentum in that? I don't know, and I feel like if they sweep Detroit here, JR, and we do this, and let's say they're 7-1, let's just say they lose in Minneapolis.
Okay,
good team, or decent team, interesting team on the road, whatever. Right. So let's say they're 7-1 before they get to that road trip. Is there a momentum factor? Like I think. And Bud's not the kind of coach that's going to, like, talk about it necessarily.
Right. But the whole smoke him if you got him principle. Like, right. We're hot like, right now. Let's ride it.
Yeah, like, you're hot. You're not, like, guys are feeling good. Do you give a guy a day off even though he's, you don't, it's really interesting to me.
Yeah. I do wonder if they would not have played everybody in the back-to-back if they weren't perfect. You know, if they weren't 4-0.
And I don't know if it's so much an undefeated thing as more of a momentum thing of it's going okay, everyone's feeling good, let's get these reps in now, because once Chris and Pat come back, it's going to change the dynamic to a degree.
And Inglis too, for sure,
right.
After
so
the
like,
New Year.
I don't know. I don't know how... It's a question that I'm for sure going to be asking. I'm just sort of picking the right time to find it. Because I do think if they sweep Detroit as we record this, like I think they should, it just sets up for a really interesting start of November.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's one more thing I wanted to ask you, Jim, but I've lost it. I've lost my train of thought. Oh, Steve Nash, man. How about that? The coach of the Nets getting ejected from the... from the game at Pfizer Forum. That was a wild scene. What was that like?
Yeah, it was really weird because I fell victim to following the ball. You know, Giannis drives down the court. You see Patty Mills go flying. And then Wesley Matthews shoots. And so then all of a sudden, Steve Nash has lost his mind. And so I did have to revert to the replay. And I still had no idea what he was so mad about. And then obviously afterward, he said he was complaining because he thought Patty Mills took a forearm to the throat from Giannis and, you know, that shouldn't have been done. And I guess.
Which happens when you have a 7-foot behemoth just like roaming around at full speed, you know?
Yeah. And Giannis does, his arms go up. I mean, opponents and opponent fan bases call him dirty.
I didn't know that.
By
the
rule, like if the forearms are going above the chest, like those are flagrant fouls, like elbows. And Giannis does get called for a couple of those here and there.
Sure.
But he must have just said some of the right magic words there. And then, to see him lose his mind like that, meme-worthy.
Meme-worthy.
Within the first week
Absolutely.
Of the first couple games of the season.
Everyone loves a good meme, especially when your team is not the butt of the joke. It's fantastic stuff. Okay, we've got a new feature that I wanted to unveil, and I didn't even talk to you about this, Jim, I've got coming up next. So we're calling this one In the Paint.
Right up in here, we'll make a happy little cloud. Use just the corner of the brush.
In the Paint is an aesthetics portion of the podcast where we talk about, the new jerseys, for example. We have a pretty good example that we want to discuss this week. Or perhaps it's an arena thing. Anyway, it's dedicated to aesthetic is what I'm trying to say. And the Bucks unveiling their purple jerseys. It is a throwback nod to the 2001 era team. There's a lot of bad teams wearing those jerseys, but at least one good one. The 2001 team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals. This is not that exact jersey. There are some updates. There's some little tweaks here and there, but definitely a '90s vibe over the weekend when the Bucks. That wasn't the Hawks game, was it? That was the Knicks game. The Knicks game. Yeah, it was okay. So the game's already running together for me as well. So what did you think, Jim Ozarski? And you and I are about the same age, so like we were young when the '90s were rolling around. Not so young to be unable to appreciate those teams. But younger-ish. What'd you think of them?
While I have aged and can appreciate things now that I didn't then, I never liked the colorways in the '90s. Like I was not, man. Like, and it's not just the Bucks. It's that era of color. In the late '90s, early 2000s, not my thing. I appreciate the difference, and I do like the idea of throwbacks. So I guess I'm cool with recognizing history, but I'm not a huge fan. So I'm like, if, you know, you wanted to ignore that and go back to a different era of Bucks jerseys as a throwback, like, I'm cool with that. But I did look, man, like Marjon Beauchamp was born October of 2000. That was when the 2000 team started.
I know, Marjon talking about, oh, it's like Ray Allen. I'm like, my friend, I really respect you playing along nicely, but you don't remember Ray Allen.
he insisted he remembers Ray Allen highlights. So did Grayson
late
Allen.
Era with the Miami Heat, Ray Allen, maybe, right? Maybe.
And Marjon appreciated the Nike, the old school Nike, like the actual printed word with the swoosh underneath, with the, again, is a throwback to that era. I appreciated his attention to detail on that. But yeah, I get why people were excited. For me, nah, man. That whole era, like, we don't need to bring it. Like, I'm an 80s baby. A lot of 80s stuff came back. A lot of 90s. Yeah. It all doesn't need to come back. It all does not need to come back.
I'm fascinated by the fascination with the purple jerseys. I don't love them, but I'm a guy who does like the color. I like the loud stuff. That usually works for me. I'm amazed at how attached Milwaukee still is to that 2001 team. I mean, that was a really – and it wasn't just that team. It was just that sort of triumvirate, the Ray Allen, Glenn Robinson.
The original big three.
Yeah, yeah, Sam Cassell, and maybe even a little bit of Vin Baker before that. I don't know, but that – you know, that was an oasis in a desert. What was it, 33 years?
Yeah.
And the Bucks won a playoff series in exactly one of those seasons. Like, those purple jerseys were worn by some very bad teams. It's akin to the Brewers pulling back that sort of, like, Motra Bame logo, we call it, with the M and the B interlocking, like Notre Dame or the New York Yankees. Those are the worst teams in Brewers history, essentially. And people wear those jerseys ironically, but not like in a way that's appreciative of that aesthetic or like that time period. So in a way, that's kind of how I feel about it. Now, there was a video of the light them up that played before the game, a throwback to that. I don't think that was the 01 team. That was either the 02 team. I think it was the 02 team, but it might have been even the 2000 team. I don't know. It wasn't quite that year, but it was still like that era, those players. And that was cool. Like, I dig that aspect of the nostalgia. Not feeling the purple ones as much as maybe others, but you know what? People do love that 2001 team. When you finally get something nice over the course of three decades plus, I guess there is that attachment, even if everything around it was kind of a bummer. That era ended very badly with George Karl, you know, bringing in Gary Payton, the whole thing, and just the way that whittled down was not great.
Yeah, and I don't know, JR. Like, I mean, I am going to take a total swipe at the baseball team, like, still celebrating at the first 1982 loser team. Of 82. Like, I get, you know, so maybe the fact that the Bucks have won a title, I don't even want to say it's wounds from back then, but I feel like once there's a recent champion and recent greatness, you can look back with, like, oh.
That was cute.
Yeah, right. And this is, look, like, Vin Baker is a legit all-star. Like, that's not, like, to make all-star teams in the NBA, you are a really good player. And, like, those, that team, like, Ray and Glenn, like, those were good players. But to your broader point of just that era that rocked that kind of color, I think it's easier to look back and be like, oh, yeah, remember that? And it, you're not just sort of celebrating something, yeah, that was actually left a sour taste in a lot of mouths for many, many years.
A couple of Halloween notes, keeping on the aesthetic vibe. You had Giannis dressing as a member of Paw Patrol as Rubble the Bulldog when he was caught out trick-or-treating with in Mequon on Sunday night. Very endearing stuff. He's so endearing, Jim. It's incredible. And then I saw on Milwaukee.com had a story about a young boy, a 7-year-old boy, who dressed as Pfizer Forum. His mom put together a costume, and it wasn't like made out of bad material either. Like, it was a really well, like, volumed costume. In the shape of the Pfizer Forum and loosely matching the color scheme. I thought that was fantastic. What is your costume situation for Halloween this year, Jim? You got anything going on?
Well, I have to work the game, so I don't think I...
So
I,
you
I
should
may
go
dress
as
up.
Something.
Look, there was a journalist spirit Halloween meme.
The meme was wild,
which
yes.
was fantastic. So I guess, can I go as... You know what? I think I'm going to dress up like Bill Glauber.
our
just amazing news reporter who has been all over the world and seen and done so many things. So I think that means I need to find like a pair of like glasses. I wear glasses, but like not Bill glasses. I might have to go to like Walgreens and get like a readers.
Yeah,
that will kind of look like him.
You need a lot of performative cynicism.
Yeah, that that's might hard be to pull more off. Of a method costume.
It is a method costume.
I wonder if anyone's going to tell Bill that I wanted to do this.
He will never listen to this podcast.
No, he'll never listen to this podcast.
He has no idea we're talking about
so,
it right
but
now.
If you hear this and you at Bill on Twitter, JR and I recommend this, and he'll wonder what's happening, and then he'll call me and maybe yell at me.
He'll definitely call both of us.
And wonder what's happening in his mention. So please do this.
Yeah.
And let him know that I will method act Bill Glover. The Bucks may not appreciate that. No. But, you know, if I do it, like, if I can really, like, pull it off in sort of question asking later. But they'll wonder what got into me. So maybe that, you know, I got dogs. You know, we don't have kids. It's not for us. So we have dogs. And Zosha may, you know, be the Black Panther, and maybe, you know, Easy. We might go with I don't know what we got something for Easy. He's a big golden 85-pound golden retriever. He's about as big as a person. So maybe making dogs look like people.
Can you dress him as Eazy-E?
You know, we could. I don't have the Raiders gear on hand.
Chains.
Yeah.
Dark shades. Probably not good with a dog.
But you know, if we can make him look like a, he's got kind of the goofy dad bod look. So we might put him in like, you know, jeans with a belt and like a ill fitting.
Love it.
Polo.
Bill Glover, by the way, one of my favorite people in this newsroom.
Oh, of course.
I love him so much.
I mean, it's all out of flattery and love.
It's yes, absolutely. Hey, if you're going to go as a journalist, I think you need one of those hats that says like press, little card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely a pen kind of everywhere, maybe in your pocket, in your hand, all over the place. So I also do not I do not have a good costume either. So I shouldn't have asked the question without having a good answer myself. I don't have one. My son, it was an inflatable dinosaur this year. We have two of those costumes. I did go last year briefly to meet him as a surprise, also dressed as an inflatable dinosaur. Those things are extremely hard to move in, very difficult to climb the steps. I was very pleased to see my neighborhood kind of up the efficiency over the last several years where people are on the sidewalk. You know, they're like right there to meet you. You don't have to climb steps or ring doorbells. People are just there with candy and fire pits and drinks for the adults. It's a really good thing. I'm really happy with the evolution of Halloween. It's become very fun. Anyway, last thought, Brook Mountain as a nickname. I think Bobby Portis coined that. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I think he was searching for, it's like, I don't think it was a malaprop. Like I think he knows that Splash Mountain
Of course.
Brook as the three-point shooter.
Truly a remarkable nickname with a nod to his Disney,
of course.
Disney love.
Very organic and, mm-hmm. and great, right? Not self-ascribed in any way. But yeah, so we're talking about Brook like blocking all of these shots, and Bobby's just kind of like Brook Mountain, like he just stays in Brook Mountain, and I got what he was trying to say, and I was like, I think that's like perfect because he's back to being this huge force, and I don't think, now look, Giannis said, oh, if I was playing against Brook, I wouldn't try him. No, I think Giannis would definitely try to dunk on Brook if Brook was on another team. But he also may not, though.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Durant tried to post to Brook Lopez, and that didn't go. Joel Embiid tried, and that didn't
no.
work. So, yeah, I like Brook Mountain as sort of like was it Bizarro Superman?
Yeah.
Right? So you have Splash Mountain is like your colorful, you know, jovial, whatever. And then you've got Brook Mountain as sort of this alter ego of sorts that just is,
I love it,
dark and sinister and swats everything away. That's how I took it, at least.
Yeah, I like that. I dig it. Anything, Bobby Portis is such an earnest guy. So, yeah. Like, I'm for it just because
right?
Bobby Portis said it. It's so great. Any last thoughts, Jim, before I send you away?
Nah, man. Hey, like, I think, look, come listen to us, tweet us, social media us. Why? Because the Packers suck.
The Packers are, what, are they playing?
Yeah.
Okay.
They suck, and that's not fun. Now, granted, please read all that stuff. Spoon told me back in 2018, JR, my first year on the beat, Mike McCarthy gets fired. Like, when the Packers are bad, especially
everybody reads.
Everybody reads.
Yeah,
everything.
It's big,
and you should.
Mm-hmm.
You should read all that stuff, but also take a break. Don't self-flagellate.
No.
All the time.
We got the Milwaukee
come
Bucks.
Come read the Bucks, because they are. It's an interesting start to the year. One I did not anticipate. Giannis. We haven't done another.
MVP watch.
I almost gave up the thing. Maybe you'll.
Well, though, yeah, we don't have a good title yet, but there will be an MVP watch, because Giannis, that guy's going to be in the conversation.
Giannis says he is not feeling it yet. He's saying he's not unlocked. He doesn't know. He's like, something's off, and yet he's already scored the most points in a 4-game period than he's ever scored. He's dropped 40s. He's flirted with 3 triple doubles, and he's just kind of like, I'm feeling about myself. JR, that could be. I mean, I don't know what that's going to be if he actually gets to where he's feeling like he thinks he can feel. So, yeah, make sure you follow us, subscribe, jsonline.com/deal. Hit us up on all the social channels. Let us know how you feel.
He's so endearing, Jim. He's so endearing. Just awesome. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Point Forward Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We will be back with you again next week. In the meantime, find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. I mean, you've probably already found us there already, but tell a friend, and check everything out at jsonline.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll chat with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.